National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Vatican reached an historic and controversial agreement with China. Will it bring freedom to persecuted Catholics in China? Will the Pope have a say in appointing bishops? This week on Register Radio, we talk with Catholic News Agency's Hannah Brockhaus on what we know and what we don't know about the China-Vatican deal. And then he went from major leagues to the Holy Leagues. We're going to talk to Father Michael Cunningham, who left professional baseball to become a priest. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, and I'm joined, as usual, by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor and co-host for Register Radio. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Great to be with you.
As usual. Well, we've got something different. We've been talking about sex abuse so much lately that it's good to be talking about something a little different.
But just as controversial.
It is. I was just going to say that. It's just as controversial. So we're talking about China and the Vatican Accord with China that was signed on September 22nd. There are a lot of questions being asked about this. It has been long anticipated, and there was word in the spring that it was going to be soon, and sure enough, it just came to be this week. Now, Pope Francis calls it an opportunity to heal past wounds and foster communion. And right now we're talking with Hannah Brockhaus from Rome. She's the correspondent for Catholic News Agency, our partners, and she's been tracking this story very closely. Hannah, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Hannah, you've written a few stories on this already, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come because we don't know all the details. But let's start with, what does the Holy See hope to achieve with the agreement that was signed September 22nd?
I think the Holy See is looking for what I think everyone's goal, ultimate goal, is for the Church in China to be in unity, to be together. So that seems to be kind of the goal they're talking about, but they call this deal just the first step, you know, the start of that journey is how they're defining it.
And so what exactly has been agreed upon, do you know?
What we do know is that it is about the appointment of bishops, and as part of that deal, the Pope also recognized the 7 illicitly ordained bishops in China that were chosen by the government. They didn't have a papal mandate. And so we don't know a lot of details besides that at this point. We just know that it'll be about the appointment of bishops somehow that will make it so both the Chinese government and the Holy See are in agreement about that. And we have a little hint from the Pope's in-flight press conference. He said that, you know, he will be choosing, that the Pope will be choosing the bishops, because that is part of the controversy, part of the concern. We don't know yet exactly what the Chinese government's role will be in that selection of bishops going forward.
Right. Matthew, I'm going to ask you to jump in here, and as our church historian, to give us a little history about what traditionally the role of what the problem has been, I guess, with the selection of bishops in China.
Well, the problem has been twofold. There's the ongoing efforts on the part of the Beijing government, some call it a regime, but the Beijing government, to control religious life across the board, across all different religious groups, all religions in China, and to impose what is being called, certainly by Xi Jinping, the premier of China, the Sinicization of religion. In other words, to make it conform very aggressively to Chinese culture, and that means controlling almost every facet of life. Obviously, then, if you're going to control every facet of life, you have to control the shepherds. And what we have seen then is this divide, as the state has appointed bishops to the patriotic Chinese church, the one that's controlled by the government, and then we've had underground bishops. And there's a lot of interaction, I know, among the two major groups of Catholics in China, but that has been a major flashpoint for a long time. And trying to reconcile that, I think, was one of the key objectives of this agreement.
Yes, and in fact, I mean, this has been called a pastoral agreement rather than a diplomatic one. Hannah, why do you think the Vatican is stressing that point, that the pastoral aspect versus the diplomatic aspect?
I think it goes back to in a way, kind of what the conversation has been leading up to this deal, because there has been a lot of speculation about it. We've had strong reports that it was coming since the new year. And one of those speculations has been, would there be a change in the diplomatic relations between Beijing and the Vatican, since right now they don't have that, and then what that would mean for Taiwan, which the Holy See does have a relationship with. So in a way, I think it could be to kind of put to rest those rumors, at least for now. And the Pope's letter that he sent to Chinese Catholics today also really stresses that this is pastoral, this is about uniting, you know, the two groups of Catholics in China.
Well, it's interesting. I think it seems that the Holy Father's, or I guess the Vatican's, way of describing this as pastoral and not diplomatic has really not quelled the voices of critics. I mean, really, there's been a lot of criticism over this because of all of the problems, as Matthew was saying, with the Chinese regime and the freedom of religion. So there's still a lot of controversy over why the Vatican would do this now. Of course, there's great hope that this is going to make life easier for Catholics, especially those who have been conflicted between what has been the state-approved church and those that are have not been state-approved. So, you know, that seems to be the big question, right? Well, how is this going to affect them? It does affect Canada. Several bishops. So there were bishops who were state approved that were excommunicated. How many are involved in this new acceptance?
There are seven now. So those are the seven still living illicitly ordained bishops that are now brought into communion with the church. Canonical sanctions have been lifted that excommunicated them by Pope Francis. And so our Pope Francis lifted those sanctions. And so now they're involved. And I've seen a report that one of them may be coming to Rome, may have received permission to come to Rome for the Synod of Bishops.
Interesting.
I wanted to echo what you said about the concern for the church still, for the underground church, because I think that what statements we've received so far, what details we have so far about the agreement, hasn't allayed those fears. It hasn't directly answered the concerns about persecution, and also answered questions about what will happen with the underground bishops. You know, we're waiting to find out the details of this plan and how it will play out with whether the government will accept them.
That's right. In fact, the institutions related to the government-sanctioned church have come out with statements, you know, after the signing of this agreement, and they've basically pledged allegiance to the government. They have not really pledged allegiance to the Holy Father, to the Pope, who they are now being united with. So very, very strange statements, kind of nationalistic type of statements, which, as Hannah, you've said, it doesn't allay the fears. It only intensifies them. So, Hannah, this has also been said to be provisional. What does that mean?
Well, how Cardinal Pietro Parolin described it, and he's been really involved in the discussion leading up to this deal, how he described it was just meaning it could be reviewed. It can be kind of monitored going forward and potentially decided, I guess, to be changed. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but just that opening is there.
Seemed like that I had read some reports that maybe it's a two-year trial, if you will. And so, again, the details of this have been very speculative and coming from you know, unidentified sources, really. So you're right. Who knows what this really means? So you had mentioned that the Holy Father issued a letter to Chinese Catholics on Wednesday. What was his message to them?
The Pope's letter to Chinese Catholics, my big takeaway on that is it's a big trust me from Pope Francis to the Catholics in that country. He talks about, you know, acknowledging some of the fears that some may have, The anxiety is there, but that also, you know, he thinks that this is the right thing, that he thinks this is, you know, is for the good of the Catholic Church there ultimately, and that he's put a lot of thought and prayer into it, in addition to, you know, the years of work and dialogue that went into it, he says. So, as I said before, I didn't see in here something that I think could really answer those fears about the persecution that we've seen happening of the underground church. But the Pope does seem to be kind of trying to show where he's coming from and that he does hope for good things from it.
Yeah, in this letter, Pope Francis talks about suffering, the suffering that the Chinese Catholics have undergone. There's a several references in other places from the Holy Father that he's also recognizing that any agreement where both sides have to give up something, mm-hmm. that there's going
compromise.
To be a compromise, but that also means further suffering for the Chinese Catholics who have endured so much and are enduring so much under what is a pretty dictatorial regime right now of persecution. So do you have the sense, Hannah, that Francis's letter is going to allay some of those concerns, or do you think that there is a possibility that this new agreement could actually ease some of the persecutions?
I guess I don't know for sure what will happen, and I'm nervous to speculate too much on that and whether it could help, this deal could help the Catholics in China, but I don't see the letter as being comforting necessarily to those fears.
You know, and neither does Cardinal Zen. Cardinal Zen mm-hmm. has been a very strong critic. He's the former Archbishop of Hong Kong. And really, he has been very, very outspoken from the very beginning of the rumors of negotiation. And so he says that this is really, he's been saying basically this is a slap in the face to the underground church, the church that has suffered for so many years. I think we should hope and pray that this isn't quite as bad as Cardinal Zen is saying, but we certainly need to take into consideration how seriously he thinks this is not the right pastoral move. But I'm sure there's more to come. And Hannah, we're very grateful for the information that you've been able to give us, and we look forward to more of your coverage. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
God bless.
When we come back, we talk to Father Michael Cunningham about going from professional sports to saying Mass. This is Register Radio here on EWTN.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Tim Staples.
The National Catholic Register gives you the world's news like no other. Only NCR has a stable of writers steeped in good Catholic theology and philosophy to give you the news with proper perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner or call 1-800-421-3230.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host. And today we are joined by Father Michael Cunningham, who I am so happy to be talking to right now because we're talking about a good news story. Father Cunningham gave up a career in pro baseball to enter the seminary. And as Trent Beatty wrote, Trent, of course, is our writer on sports. He's interviewing major sports players all the time. He recently wrote this profile of Father Cunningham, and who went from catching souls, who went from catching baseballs to catching souls. Ordained last May, he now serves in the priestly fraternity of St. Peter at the National Shrine of St. Alphonsus Liguori in Baltimore. So, Father, it is so good to have you on talking with us today. Welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So, Father Cunningham, you had this career in baseball. When did you first start playing, and how far did you go?
So, I first started playing baseball before I could probably remember. I think my dad, I was a catcher, and I think my dad said that when I was a kid, I got behind the plate, and I just looked like I knew what I was doing. So probably before I could remember, I was playing ball, and I played ball through high school and college, and then after college, I was fortunate enough to sign a professional contract with the Florence Freedom in Kentucky. And before I got out of camp, though, they released me, and because I think they got a memo that they wanted good players, they got rid of me. And went out to Arizona to try to play again that next year. I saw the lights where the game had passing by. I coached for college wooden bat leagues for several years after that. And then later on, I got into the work world and started discerning a vocation a few years into my career of working for orthopedic surgeon.
So it sounds like maybe some of the baseball attempts to keep it as a career were helpful, perhaps in helping direct your vocation. I mean, was there a connection between, I guess, this perhaps stardom in your mind of being a baseball player to realizing, okay, that's not going to work, and God might have another plan?
Well, yeah, because I thought I was going to play professional baseball for the rest of my life, and when that was denied, I was crushed. I had no idea what I was gonna, I had no idea that it wouldn't work. that really wasn't part of my plans, but, God had other plans right there. Thanks be to God, because when I got released, I mean, I was balling.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never been cut in my life. It was the first time that I ever heard, when I told my father that I got cut, it was the first time I ever heard him say that. He goes, "Son, I don't know what to tell you." And that really, really cut me.
Yeah.
To the core. I had no idea what I was going to do. But also, too, like I said in the article, God rest her soul, there was the grandmother of the host family that I was living with. She had passed that week. I got released. The car, my window and my car broke, and then my girlfriend broke up with me. So I was really living a country music song.
Seriously.
That week. It went from really, really good to really, really, really sad.
And so what was your faith life before that? I mean, was it there, or was that something you found along the way?
No, I was always, thank you to God, I've always been in the church. I've always been Catholic, and most of all that comes from my mother, who taught me how to be Catholic. My dad taught me how to be a man, and my mom taught me how to be Catholic. So thank you to God for that. I was always in the church. My faith has grown, after that. And it was from meeting people, that were converts or people that I met with the gym. So it was referenced in my article, about the man that I met at a CrossFit gym, nonetheless, named Joel Raines, who brought me to my first Latin Mass. And we started having conversations of substance, which you don't really find too much these days, but I took advantage of it and really grew in my faith from the years just prior to going into seminary.
Well, you mentioned being taken to the Latin Mass, and I know in the profile by Trent Beattie that he talks about the fact that you learned something from children at the Latin Mass. Is that true?
Yeah, it was my buddy's kids. So I knew I had never gone to a Latin Mass before, and so I really didn't know when we do things, and whether it's standing or sitting or kneeling or whatnot. And so in order to know it, I was just watching his family, my buddy Joel and his kids, and okay, I'll stand here. Okay, I'll kneel here. Okay, I'll sit here. So I was really being humble at the moment. I just had to figure out what to do, and they knew what they were doing, and I didn't. So that's how it happened.
Well, but so at that point, then, it would not have occurred to you that you'd actually become a member of the priestly fraternity, I'm sure.
No, not at all. So at that point, I met a priest who's now Father Jason Barone. He's up in the Diocese of Charlotte, North Carolina, doing really great things, and my buddy Joel brings me over to him, and I meet Father Barone before he was father, and he said, he points to me and said, "This guy, we're going to try to kick this guy into seminary too." And at that point in my life, I was 90% no, 10% maybe.
Yeah.
So, the fraternity wasn't on my mind. I didn't even know who the fraternity or what the fraternity was at that time.
Sure, sure. So, how did the thought, when did you know, I guess, that, okay, God wants me. He's calling me. He wants me to be a catcher of souls. When did you know?
When I said in that article, when I found that cross, after my mom had been uncluttering her purse, and when it said Father Mike on it, it scared me. And I brought it to, my pastor, Father Gann, because I wanted an objective view on the point that I wasn't crazy. And then I brought it to a fraternity priest named Father Ferguson, to get another, opinion as well. And as both opinions came, hey, you should follow this right now and head on to a vocation. And then from there, asking the Blessed Mother, you know, okay, I believe that your son wants me to be a priest. Where should I go for formation? And she led me to Denton, Nebraska at Our Lady of Guadalupe Seminary and to study for the priest of fraternity of St. Peter.
I love that the little anecdote in the story that you applied to the FSSP seminary. And you still remember opening the acceptance letter, and you were leaning against the wall, and you were so shocked that you actually slid all the way down the wall to the floor.
Oh yeah. I just, you know, if I did, part of me wanted to say no, because if I didn't get in, then I just go to work on Monday. You know, I keep the house, I keep my car, I keep my job. No, everything just keeps going on. But, there's a difference between applying to seminary and getting in. So I slid down that wall and there was fear in that. And then by the grace of God, I was able to sell my house, my car, quit my job, move to middle of nowhere, Nebraska. And then, after, like I said in the article, when I looked out the window for my first day at seminary, I looked outside and I said, oh boy, what did I just do?
Sure.
There was fear. Trust me.
Well, Father Cunningham, I hear joy, though, in your voice and excitement. And it's not an easy time to be a priest. I'm not going to go there. We've been talking about that too much. But tell me, how has it been for you? And where do you find your joy? And what would you tell anyone considering this?
You find your joy from the source where everybody should find everything. And that's from the Eucharist. That's Jesus Christ himself. The only way a priest can be a good priest, the only way a Catholic can be a good Catholic layman, the only way anybody can be good is starting your day out with Christ. So, it starts from the altar. If you want to make it, it's easy. It's be around Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Follow him. If you don't do that, well, I can show you where you're going. But, it's all from Christ. It starts there and it ends there. He's the Alpha, he's the Omega. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. He invented the wheel and everything else. All we have to do is follow the man that died, the only man that's ever died, and then come back to life. All we have to do is follow him. If we do that, I mean, everything's going to be fine. And he's come to give us joy. He wants to give us joy. All we have to do is take it.
Absolutely.
It's there for us.
Absolutely.
So just whatever he wants us to do, whether that's be like, what, ask the Blessed Mother to ask her son, what do you want me to do? And I'll do it. Whether that's be a priest or married, whether that's be for a woman, whether that's be a nun or married, you know, whatever. You know, the words of St. John's Gospel, the last words of Our Lady were, do whatever he tells you. And the last words of Christ in that Gospel was, follow me. That's all you have to do.
Absolutely. Well, I am so grateful for your joy that we can hear it as we talk to you. And of course, for this wonderful picture that you gave to Trent for us to use at ncregister.com on the story that's titled Former Pro Baseball Player Completes Transition to Priesthood. And he has this beaming face. Listeners, you got to go look at this story because it is joy and it is hope. And we know where to place that hope in Christ. Father Cunningham, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to help us out, we're at St. Alphonsus. Come on the internet. We're going to have a lot of prayers go up. So if you want to help restore a National Shrine of St. Alphonsus. Check out the National Shrine of St. Alphonsus, stalphonsusvault.org, and that's where I'm at.
And also remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunton and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.